The opinions and views shared in this podcast are the opinions and views of the host and the host alone. They are not a reflection of his employer or any other organization that the host is a member of. The host does not speak for anyone, only himself.
This is the I Am Pith Podcast. Get ready for contact.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Excuse me. This is your boy Dex with the I Am Pits podcast. It's been a while, but I'm back for another episode. Been a little bit out of it, busy living life, being a cop. And the show's gone from a weekly show to a bi-weekly show to a monthly show to a bi-monthly show. And now it's gone to kind of a when I feel like it and have the time show. And I'm absolutely sorry about the absence, but you know, I went on a little vacation with the family. Picking up extra work. And I mean, things have been hopping. It's baseball season in my house, assistant coaching. My daughter's got activities, y'all. And so, and at some point in time, dad's got to rest and find some time to kind of chill out and relax. So I ain't going to lie, man. My PlayStation's been getting a lot of love. And if you're looking at the YouTube video, you can see it in my eyes. A brother's tired. But, you know, here I am. And so while this time in between the last episode, I've done a lot of just kind of sitting back and just watching and listening to chaos unfold around the world, listening to just chaos unfold in America and in my community. I mean, we have so much going on. Israel, Iran, you know, then you got, you know, Israel, Hamas, the whole Russia thing. And then we got migrants everywhere, illegal migrants, illegal aliens everywhere. And it's just, and my problem is with social media and podcasts and everything is everybody has a voice and an opinion who probably don't need one. And like I said, I just recently got on TikTok. And so I'm about to be 40 next month. And I tell people I'm always about 2-3 years behind on trends and social media. And hey, so now I'm on TikTok and as I scroll through TikTok, I see a lot of people that have their own news pages and newscasters and reporting the news. And I'm just like, and I'm sitting here looking at this stranger on TikTok and I'm like, who are you and why should I listen to you? You know, and then I just look at myself and I remind myself, like, who am I and why should people listen to me? I don't know these people and I don't really want to hear a stranger's opinion who I have no clue who they are, what their background is and what's their take on what's happening on the other side of the world. I don't know and I don't care, you know, and there's people giving advice on everything. You know, I'm just like, the world is so convoluted with so much crap and junk, yo, and it's just so much noise. And I've taken the time between this last show to kind of step away from the noise, you know, just kind of listen and just watch things unfold. You know, and we are where we are as a country and as the world right now. And there's really not much we can do about it, you know. But I say to myself, you know, this is why I started my podcast, is because I wanted to have a platform where I could have a voice. And like, so I'm just another voice out here. I'm just a guy. Nobody special, yo, but I actually have credentials behind my name that can kind of give me some clout and give me, you know, that can give me some, you know, some believability when I get on here, get behind the mic and I talk and I express an opinion. You know, like I am just a guy, you know, but if you take the time to listen to my podcast and listen, get to know me, send me a message or something, you know, I am just a guy, yo, but I have actual real life experience with the things I talk about. I'm not just coming to you all and giving you my thoughts based on my feelings and opinions of stuff I don't know about. No, I'm giving you all actual opinions and views from a guy who's had skin in the game in law enforcement, guy who's had skin in the game and dealing with like kind of foreign affairs, being overseas when I was in the military, you know, like, and being in the Middle East. And, but then we get people on here, we get these 18, 19, 20 something year olds and 30 year olds who never done anything but have this strong opinion on what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on at the border and what we need to do to fix it. And I'm like, who are you, bro? I don't want to hear from you. I want to hear from people who have been there and done that, you know? And then the thing is, just because you live on the border doesn't mean you're a border expert. I know plenty of people that live on the border, but don't make them a border expert. I know plenty of cops who probably you don't want to take advice from because they just regular run-of-the-mill cops and ain't done nothing spectacular with their career. Me, on the other hand, I am just a cop, but you know, like I said, I've been doing this a while and I have done things within law enforcement and the profession that can give my credit to my name. And so that's why we're here today, is because I kind of want to dive into what's going on in America at the border crisis. And as you all know, I was a Border Patrol agent for a year, and I kind of want to share that story. And man, that's one thing I've always wanted to do on here, is kind of dive into my story of becoming a federal agent. And man, like I've been wanting to do it, but I've just kind of been sitting back and listening, yo. But man, even where I work at, I am starting to see and feel the impact of our border being invaded every time I get in my patrol car. I mean, the other day at work, I mean, it was like every car I stopped, no habla inglés, señor. And it's just like, nobody speaks English. If there's a car accident, nobody has a driver's license or insurance. And that, you know, and I still know a little bit of Spanish from my time in the Border Patrol. And I can ask, like, ¿en qué país nació? Like, in what country were you born? You know, and they'd be like, oh, Venezuela, my friend, or Guatemala. I had two run-ins with Guatemalans last week in one shift. You know, and both of the dudes went to jail. And I'm just saying, we weren't targeting them because they were Guatemalans. That's not the case, yo. But I'm just saying that, man, I'm starting to see more and more the impact of this here where I work at in Louisville. And if I'm seeing it here, I know everybody else is seeing it everywhere. Our American citizens are feeling the impact of it. I mean, we see it on the news. But I mean, the thing is, I tell people, you have to get off your phone and go out in your community and engage with actual people. You know, and you will see that, you will feel and see the effects of this as well. You know, and if you're not, it's because you're not leaving your home. You know, but I mean, me and my partners were talking. I was like, man, when has it ever been like this? Yo, like where you go on a domestic and nobody's cooperating and everybody speaks Spanish and nobody's from the country. Nobody has ID. You know, you stop a guy at a park, and the crazy part is getting me is, you know, I know very little Spanish, but what I do know, I know how to say, yo, but they'll play like they don't understand English, and they'll act like they don't understand what I'm saying in Spanish as well. And then I break out Google Translate, and they'll still act like they don't understand. And because people are here in America, and they feel like they're entitled to be here and like they don't have to follow the rules. And my thing is, every time I come in contact with one of them and they are riding dirty and, you know, they ain't got a driver's license, I'm giving them a ticket, because if you're going to be here, legal or not, I prefer you not be here at all if you're not here legally, yo, but if you're going to be here, I'm going to put paper on you. You know? But the thing is, crazy, I can't verify that you are who you say you are, because we don't know who these people are. Yo, you could just give me a name, yo, but I'll be honest, man, most of them cooperate to a degree, yo, and give me like their passport. So I can actually get some sort of name. And everybody right now has got the old international driver's license, yo. And I'm like, that means nothing here in America. That is not a legit driver's license, man. I mean, you have to have an American driver's license from the state you are residing in. You know, like they give you all these papers, and I'm like, bro, this ain't it, man. And then I have to give them a court date, because I tell them, listen, if you're going to be here, you have to make sure that you're doing right. Because if I'm going to hold American citizens accountable for driving without a driver's license and not having insurance and not having tags on their car that are up to date, it makes you think I'm not going to hold you accountable. Yeah, American citizens pay my salary. You know, the community I work for pays my salary, myself included, because I just sent a lot of money to the IRS yesterday for tax day. Yo, so yeah, yo, so yeah, and hey, I'm gonna make sure that I take care of the American people. But I don't care what your status is in this country. I'm going to hold you to account, and I'm going to make sure that you are responsible when you're behind the wheel and that you have insurance. Because if you don't, I'm going to tow your car. If you don't have a driver's license, you're getting a ticket. You're going to have to go see the judge. Will anything happen? Maybe not, probably not, because I have absolutely very little faith in the American justice system right now and the way things are going in this country. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to do my part. I am going to do my part, because I swore an oath to the Constitution and to protect and serve my community. And that starts with making sure that everybody is doing what they're supposed to be doing, myself included. I tell people, I have my driver's license with me. I always have my insurance, and I always got my tags up to date. You know, and so I will give anyone a ticket for those, because I don't want to be a hypocrite. You know, you run a stop sign, I can work with you, because yeah, I don't always come to a complete stop at stop sign. If you're speeding, I can work with you, because I don't always go to speed limit. But I don't compromise on those three: driver's license, insurance, registration. If I'm giving my money, you got to give yours, homie. You know, but for those of you watching on the YouTube channel, you could probably see that I'm wearing, of course, the gunfighter hoodie right here. I'm a big man, and I run hot. So typically I don't wear hoodies, but it's getting warm out, and keep it kind of cool in the house. So I decided to throw on the Gunfighter hoodie. If you want to go to gunfighter.co, get your hoodie, man. These things are phenomenal. But if you're also watching the YouTube channel and if you're listening, I'm also wearing my United States Border Patrol hat that I earned back from graduating the United States Border Patrol Academy. I wore when I was out in the field, yo. So like I said, you know, this episode is about my time in the United States Border Patrol. So, but, you know, before we get to that, I want to go ahead and just kind of lay the groundwork with how I decided to join the United States Border Patrol. And I'm going to have some pictures for this thing as well, yo. So we're going to see how that works. And also stick with me, and I'm going to do my best to describe the pictures to the people watching. Sorry about that. So yeah, I'm gonna do my best to describe the pictures to the people listening to the audio. Yo, so man, when I got out of the Army, I had no clue what I wanted to do, and I stumbled across a couple TV shows on A&E, and I just knew, I was like, man, I want to be in law enforcement. I wanted to be a federal agent. I was looking at the ATF, U.S. Marshals, FBI, DEA, but the U.S. Marshals always stood out to me. And in 2013, after 3 years of patrol, I got selected by the United States Marshals to be on their task force. Yo. So I go leave patrol and go work with the U.S. Marshals for 2 years on the task force. And I absolutely fell in love with the job, but I also fell out of love with it real quick, yo, because I just did not like the aspect of, you know, just sitting on a house and watching, waiting for somebody to make a move. Because people see the United States Marshals Task Force, it's always them kicking in doors and going and taking down the bad guys. They don't see the work that goes into that. And I thought to myself, I was like, yeah, I would like to do that eventually, yo, but I still kind of like being on patrol and I like being a police officer. And then I started watching a show on A&E, and I think it was Border Wars. And so I started watching Border Wars and seeing the United States Border Patrol, and then I just kind of became infatuated with it. You know, and then, you know, and I had a buddy that was Border Patrol, you know, and they just, I'm sitting here watching the show, watching these guys run around in the desert with rifles, chasing illegals, riding ATVs. And this is what I tell people, you got to realize about me. I'm an idealist. And when I see something on TV, I'm the gullible idiot, you know, that's like, man, that looks pretty spectacular. You know, just kind of like with the Army, you know, just watching Black Hawk Down at the 9/11, you know, and then you got the Army commercials, you know, in the Army of One and be all you can be on it. You got guys propelling out of helicopters, yo, and I'm thinking, I want to do that. That's going to be dope. Yo, then you get there and it's like, this is not like the commercial. And well, I got caught like that by the Border Patrol watching Border Wars and, you know, and just anytime something with the border came on TV and on the news, and I was just all in, you know, and it just looked like, man, that's the type of work I like doing. I like being out on the field, being free, being mobile, and hey, I'm not stuck in an office and in a desk. And I was like, yo, I'm going to give my shot at trying to become a Border Patrol agent. So I take the test for the Border Patrol for the first time, I think in 2014 and 2015, you know, when I was on the task force. And my thought was like, yo, I'm gonna get my foot in the door with the Border Patrol, then lateral over to the United States Marshals after a few years with the Border Patrol. Yo, but turns out I'm not that smart, and I failed the United States Border Patrol test, and I have no clue what portion I failed. If I had to guess, it was probably the language portion of the test, show where they create some sort of fake made-up language, yo, and it's just, and you had to try to decipher it. And I just knew when I was taking this test, like, bro, this is not gonna work. And I guess the test measures your aptitude to learn Spanish, which was probably a good thing, because boy, I had a hard time learning Spanish. I ain't gonna say I learned Spanish. I learned to tolerate Spanish, and I learned a couple key phrases, but that was pretty much it. You know, so I failed the test, you know, and you had to wait like a year, I think a year and before you can go and reapply again and take the test. You know? And so I, you know, finished my time on the task force and I go back to patrol. So I'm on patrol doing my thing, you know, and then, you know, Trump gets elected in 2016. And at that point in time, you know, we're still having issues on the border. And, you know, Trump is like, hey, we need more Border Patrol agents. And I'm sitting there listening. It's like, okay, we need more Border Patrol agents. Cool. What are you going to do about it, President? And Trump comes up with this thing and he says, yo, hey, you know, if you served in the United States military, or if you are a police officer and you want to be a Border Patrol agent, you are hereby exempt from taking the United States Border Patrol entry test. I was like, man, this is a sign from God. You know, and like, I'm like, this is cool. So I tell my wife, and, you know, my wife is not really keen on me going away for 6 months to go to training, you know, and moving down to Arizona to a place we know nothing about. We've never been, don't know anybody. You know, and she's like, you know, and I would sit there, look at the TV, and I'd be like, hey, baby, what do you think about Arizona? You know, she's like, what about Arizona? I'm like, it might be fun. You know, she's like, absolutely not. You know, and so, you know, and at this point in time, man, I was in a good place with the Louisville Metro Police Department. Like, I was, in my mind, I had the best job on the department. I was in the downtown area patrol. I was doing everything I wanted to do. Had the best schedule, work with the best people, yo. And I was on, had a 4-day weekend every other weekend. You know, I mean, I'm riding ATVs, foot patrols, and hey, we're getting after it downtown. You know, and this is before 2020. I mean, man, we're going at it every day, you know, and just having so much fun, you know. And I was like, as much fun as I was having, but you know, I still felt like I wanted to do more because there was always that thing in me that was like craved to be a federal agent, man. I held the feds in such high regard because I didn't know better at the time. But, you know, I said, I'm an idealist. I see federal agents and I thought so highly of America. And I was like, yo, like if you're going to work for the federal government, these positions, you're like, you have to be a person of high quality and high character. And I was like, yo, that's me. And I want to contribute to that. And I want to help my country be safe, you know. And it was the most selfless thing I could do. You always go back to serving my country, you know. And so, man, and so I go and sign up for the Border Patrol. You know, I do all the entry stuff I got to do, you know, and just I'm just sitting here waiting. And I mean, and man, me and my wife, we had literally just built the house sometime in 2016 or 2016, late 2017. I can't remember, but yeah, we just built the house and moved into it. You know, we're just living life. You know, and I'm just sitting here praying to God every day, like, God, I want this call for the Border Patrol. I want to be a Border Patrol agent so bad. You know, and I just got, you know, I started praying and something told me, it's like, man, go ahead and sell your house, bro. And we're not even in this house since. And I sold the house because I just knew I was going to get the call from the Border Patrol. You know, I just, sorry about that, y'all. Thought I had my phone on Do Not Disturb. So, yeah. So, you know, where was I at? But yeah, so we sell our house, yo. And then I remember I'm at the gym working out, you know, and then I get the call, you know, and it's just like, hey, is this Dexter Pitts? I'm like, yeah. Hey, you've been selected to attend the United States Border Patrol Academy. And they gave me my three options of stations. And when they call you, you get these options. And I knew the station I wanted to go to was NACO, the Brian A. Terry station, because I was familiar with Brian Terry and I was familiar with the family and their story. And I was like, I want the Brian A. Terry station. You know, and the next thing you know, they told me, hey, this is your report date, November 5th, 2018. You know, and hey, that's when you report, you know, to the station, the Tucson station, you know, we're going to get you all set up and get going. And I left the gym. I was in the middle of a workout and I was so happy. And I went home and told my wife, oh my God, I got the call. I'm going to be a Border Patrol agent. You know, I got the call. And then I started calling my buddies on the PD and people like, bro, you sure you want to do this? I'm like, absolutely, man. I want this so bad. And at this time, you're like, I was so dedicated. And I mean, and I was in the best shape of my life. And I want to tell you, I am not joking. I was in the absolute best shape of my life, even better than when I was in the Army. And I was a 35 year old man at this point. And yo, dude, I mean, I was ripped, shredded because I knew the Border Patrol Academy was a tough academy. And I was like, if I'm going to get hired and selected and I'm going to go here and I'm going to be in best shape, I'm coming to succeed and not fail because failure was not an option. Yo. So, I mean, man, like I said, I'm in the best shape of my life, man. And so I get the call and then the next thing you know, I'm like, man, I have to notify. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen, but I have to notify the people that I work with that, hey, I'm putting in my 2 weeks notice. And guess what? I'm out of here. You know, so let me pull up the screen. We're going to ready, pull up. There we go. So, yeah. So I get the call and then I give them my letter. Of my letter, like, hey, I'm leaving in 2 weeks and I'm done with the Louisville Metro Police Department. So I put my wife in an apartment, you know, and then I just start making plans to leave and go, you know, and then the next thing you know, I get a plane ticket and I am on my way to to New Mexico, to the United States Border Patrol Academy, you know. And so when you get there, your first day, I mean, man, I was decked out in my new suit. I'm going to pull up my picture right here. I mean, yeah, man, check this young Thundercat out, boy. Like I said, dude, slim, trim. I was like 215 pounds in this picture, bro. And I mean, man, that suit was cut right, bro. And I mean, I felt like $1 million, man. When I tell you, dog, that, man, I was a bad man. You know, there's nothing that nobody could tell me, dude. Nobody could tell me anything, dog. I mean, I just felt so good in this picture, dude. So, you know, it was one of those things where I just, I was just proud to be there, man. I was just proud that I'm going to be a federal agent, you know, and just, and man, I just remember getting on the plane to leave, how excited I was. But man, I didn't realize when I was leaving what I was leaving behind. Like, I had a wife and kids, you know, and my kids, man, I think my son was like 2 years old, you know, my daughter was like 5 or 6, you know, and they were just crying. But I'm like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm going to be back, yo, but daddy's doing this to give you all a better life. And I mean, man, the pay I was going to be making as a federal agent was ridiculous, yo. And I told my wife, you're not going to have to work no more. You come home, yo, and you can stay home with the kids. You don't have to do anything else. I'm going to take care of you. You know? So, yeah, so, you know, we get down to there, and this is where you meet all your people that are going to be going to your guest with. This is where I met some of my best friends, as you can see here in the photo. That's my homeboy, Johanny, right here. Just throw a little thing around his face. Yeah, hey, that's my boy, Johanny. He's actually no longer with the Border Patrol. He just had his last day the other day. You know, and he's officially gone and transferred. That's my homegirl, Lolo, right there in the corner. Yo, and you got my homeboy, Tomas Sanchez. You can't see his face, and I'm glad because he's still active Border Patrol. Yo, and then this little white head in the back right here. That's my dude. That's my homeboy, Stu, the giant Navy SEAL. And he's not really a Navy SEAL, but when I first met him, I thought he was because he had a little bit. Everybody thought he was a Navy SEAL, but Stu was like, nah, player. Ain't got nothing to do with the military. So, yeah. So, man, yeah, so when you get down there, you know, they're treating you good. You're doing all your in processing. You know, then they get you in a van and they drive you to your station. And you're doing all your in processing, processing paperwork, yada, 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 yo. And then it's like, yeah, man, I don't know how to describe it, yo, but it's exciting, but it's also nerve wracking, yo, because I know what's coming because I've done so much research on the United States Border Patrol Academy. And all I kept hearing was, it's a nightmare and it's hell, you know. So, you know, we get on the bus, you know, we're meeting with all our classmates at the airport, yo, and then we're getting everybody together, yo, and then all of a sudden you get on the bus and you're going to Artesia, New Mexico, where the United States Border Patrol Academy is. So we get there, and it's just like in the military. And they come on the bus, yo, and then it's just yelling, screaming. And I remember there was one kid, a young kid at the back of the bus, and a homeboy was like 18 years old. And they were like, get off the bus, get off the bus. He was like, nope. I'm not getting off the bus. And I was just looking like, come on, bro, let's get off the bus. He's like, I'm not doing it. And homeboy folded right then and there, yo. And so, you know, we get off the bus and they're yelling and we're grabbing our bags, yo. And we're standing there and they're telling us how to stand at attention. And as I'm standing there, yo, and also this is nighttime too, yo. So it's nighttime. It's dark in New Mexico. You know? So I'm standing at attention. If you know my story, I got blown up in Iraq, and my left arm does not fully bend and extend, you know. And so, yo, they're yelling at everybody, trying to scare everybody and intimidate them, you know. And they, you're not standing at attention, what do you think you're doing, why are you disrespecting my patrol, you know. And somebody comes up to me, straighten that left arm, right, you straighten that left arm out, recruit, you know. And I'm just like, sir, I can't, this is as far as my arm bends, sir. He was like, what's wrong with your arm? I was blown up by an IED in Iraq in 2005, sir. And then he comes up to me, he's like, thank you for your service. And then he just moves on to the next person, yo. So it's yeah, and if I had been, you know, the young kid on the bus, I remember how I felt when I was 19 and going to Army boot camp. It's an overwhelming feeling when you've never been yelled at and screamed like that before. But I'm a 34-year-old man at this point, been through the police academy, and I'm just like, man, there's nothing these people here can do or say to me to break me. And so, you know, I'm just kind of going with the flow, like, yeah, whatever, 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 you know. So, man, but before I got to this point, I went to visit my buddy Nick. My buddy Nick's a Border Patrol agent, and he was in the Tucson area. You know, and he told me, he's like, buddy, make sure you pack light pits. I'm like, why pack light? Yo, he's like, trust me, man, just pack light. You know, and so I packed as light as I could, yo, but I mean, I'm going to be at this place for 6 months. And, man, I packed as light as I could, but my bag was still pretty heavy. And the next thing you know, not, and see, I always promised I would not show this video because I did not want to ruin the experience for anybody going to the Border Patrol Academy. You know, but I'm going to show this video because I just want to prepare you for if you do decide to go, this is what's going to happen. You know, next thing you know, hey, we grab our bags, you know, and they're like, hey, grab your bags, let's go. And then we start marching to our rooms. And I took this here myself when I was up in my room in the barracks, you know. And so, you know, they're yelling at you, screaming at you, you know, telling you to grab your bags, and you're walking around the entire complex. People are getting tired and dropping out. And so, you know, this was always the show, yo, like when the new people come in, everybody would just come out on the balcony, you know, just watch the new people get thrashed and shredded and yelled at, yo, and it just became such entertainment, man. So, you know, we get there, yo, and just we're there for, and I mean, we've already done in processing, but what people don't realize is that Ortiz, New Mexico is at a higher elevation, you know, and guess what? You're not allowed to work out in that first, I think it's week or two, yo, because your body to, you know, get used to being at such a higher elevation. And so the first 2 weeks we didn't do anything. And we just literally sat around and did a couple classes, yo. And then, you know, we just kind of lived life. So, I mean, and yeah, we watch movies, play games, yo, and just on the weekend we go wild out and drink, man. And it was kind of not great, yo, but it all changed shortly after that. But you know, we every morning, you know, you have formation, and you know, this is us right here in formation every, you know, every morning and hanging out. And man, these people were strict, man. Like, you know, you're wearing your green uniforms, you got your red guns, and you know, these are some of my classmates here, man. And you know, we're just kind of, you know, we're basically recruits, man. We're nobody, you know, and just it was just I don't really know how to explain it. It was a very strict and controlled environment, man. It's not as strict as the military, but it's pretty up there, Nail. That's a picture of me right there. Look at that face, boy. Look at that young 34-year-old skin. Slim and trim, and that's my boy Stu right there next to me, dog. That's my boy Stu, and a couple of my classmates, yo. But you know, so we're just sitting, you know, going with the flow of things for weeks, and then it all kind of changes when you meet the guys of the United States Border Patrol Academy. These are your PT instructors in the physical techniques department. These people are the monsters, or they are the drill instructors, and these guys are the Marine Corps drill instructors of FLETC. They are the gods. And so they take you into the PT room, yo, and then the next thing you know, yo, they're just yelling, tables are being turned over and tables are flipping, and you start seeing people break, you know? And I mean, man, and this is every day, yo. And I'm just like, you know, like I've been through enough, and there's nothing that these people could say to me or do to me, yo, that's gonna break me, because I just know what to act, yo. But I mean, I ain't gonna lie, it was stressful. I mean, every time we would go to PT in the physical techniques building, I mean, we'd have like, man, we had like 3-4 minutes to change into our PT gear, and then we go to PT. I mean, man, we get thrashed and demolished, man. I mean, man, I'm talking about hundreds of pushers, man. Like I said, it's not just weight room stuff, but I mean, man, you are literally in there dying, and man, they're running you to death, and man, it's an absolute, part of my language, it's an absolute ass beating. I mean, and man, it's intense, man. It's just never ending. Man, and it's just an hour and a half of your life that you just want to die, yo. But these guys are absolute monsters of PT studs, and man, they said there's one instructor there, right? He would just sit. He's like, "We're gonna do one push-up today." He would get in the push-up position, go down, then come up, you know, and then he would just hold it, literally the plank in the push-up position for apparently an hour, is what some people were saying, yo. And then people would be falling out in class, and you tell them, "Why are you all tired? We've only done one push-up. Why are you struggling?" You know? And man, so, you know, we start prepping, and people don't, so you start prepping with PT because you want to pass the Border Patrol, the PT test, yo, that you have to pass that in order to graduate. You know, so man, they have us out there, man, on the track, and man, we're running sprints, and man, we're running these quarter mile intervals, yo, and they're destroying us every day, yo, and man, I'm not a runner. Never been a runner, was not a runner in the Army. Yo, and like I said, I was in the best shape of my life, bro. And man, I was getting demolished and thrashed, yo. And I could not keep up with these guys. I couldn't keep up with anybody. And in my mind, I thought I was going to be a PT stud because I lost like 60 pounds, yo. And I was running, before I left for the training, I was running 3.2 miles at Parkwood Hills, yo, in like 25, 30 minutes, yo. But for some odd reason, man, that elevation equalized me and destroyed me and killed me, man. And I was struggling to just make it through training, man. And and every day we go to PT, yo, I was just like miserable, man, absolutely miserable. And then the worst part is after you're done in PT for the day, yo, like they'd be like, "You have 4 minutes to change." So they would say, "You have 4 minutes to shower and 4 minutes to change." Ain't nobody showering in 4 minutes and getting changed. So you go, you take off your PT gear, and then you get in your green uniform. And you run around the rest of the day with a soggy booty, because you've been sweating and running all day, yo, because there ain't no time for no shower. And so you just stinking the rest of the day, bro. Absolutely stinking and just swamp booty and just, man, it's horrible. And if you look here, yeah, this is a part of my class here. Let me see if I can zoom in. Yeah, that's all my homeboys right there from the BP, man. And that's our class. And where's my black self at? There I am right there. Yep. And that's, I mean, right there. But yeah, hey, these guys right here, these are your PT instructors. So like I said, they are the gods of the academy, and they will make your life an absolute miserable living hell. And they used to mess with us. You're like, and they, if we weren't up performing to their standard, man, you get sent to the med shed. And if you get so many trips to the med shed and they don't like you because you're fat, and they'll kick you out, bro. And you start all over again. And there were people that got sent to the med shed because they couldn't perform and keep up. Yo, and they'd be like, hey, yo, to the med shed. I think it was like 7 or 8 trips to the med shed, and you were donezo, right? Like, you were out of there. You had to start all over again, man. I got sent to the med shed, like, I think twice, two or three times, yo, because I was having a hard time. My knees were hurting, and my arm was hurting so bad from my injuries. And this is the worst part. You're like, when I came in, man, I came into PT, and they first saw me, I was wearing knee pads and elbow pads and braces because, man, I'm older and my body's beat up from Iraq and the policing. And they were like, what, a walking billboard for, you know, whatever brand of brace I was wearing? It was like, this guy's weak. We don't care if you're a war hero. We're going to make you quit. And I was just like, oh, boy, you shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have said that. Pissed me off, yo. I hurt and was in pain, yo. And hey, but I never let them saw me struggling in pain. I refused to try to show them any sign of weakness, yo. I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna be the guy that y'all beat down and destroy, yo, and just make me quit this program, yo. And if you look here, there's a picture of us, engaging in PT. So yeah, you can see, that's me right there. Yeah, yo. So they would take us running around the complex, and this is a huge complex, y'all. Then they put us in the sand, and we run through the dirt and through the sand, you know, and get in the push position. And then people would have to crawl through the other people, you know, like the Indian run, you know. And it was awful, man. I ain't gonna lie, dude. It was an absolute nightmare. And I hated my life in PT and in the academy, man. So yeah, then, you know, so you're getting destroyed in PT every day. No, but then there's also the academic side in the Border Patrol, which a lot of people aren't aware of and don't know. I mean, man, so you got your Border Patrol test, which is you have your immigration test. Then you also have your operations test, how you operate in the field. And then you have Spanish. And as you know, I'm just a Negro from Kentucky with roots deep in Kentucky. I don't know Spanish at all. And man, I mean, man, I think it was like the first week we were there, they baby step you into Spanish. I think the first week they were like, yo, here's the alphabet. Need you to learn the alphabet in Spanish. It's A, B, C, D, F, I can't even remember at this point, yo, but Hotaka. And I was just, and man, I was struggling to learn the alphabet, but I did it. And you have a Spanish test once a week. And I remember, you know, you would have to go stand before the Spanish instructors and do your alphabet, and you have to take a test on the computer as well. But there was also a scenario you would have to pass. Yo, so I passed the first week of, you know, the alphabet. And then the second week, yo, was like, I had to learn the days of the week and the months of the year. And I was struggling with that. And you know what I did? I hopped on YouTube and I would watch these little kids training videos on how to speak Spanish. And I would literally sit there sing Enero, Febrero, Marzo, Abril, Mayo, Junio, Junio, Augusto, September, October, November, December. And that was the only way I knew the months of the year. And so they'd be like, recruit Pitts, tell me the months of the year in Spanish. And I would just bust out in this little kid song. And all my fellow recruits in there, they would laugh me out of the building, yo, because I was struggling to learn Spanish. But hey, I did what they asked and requested of me, and I passed the test, yo. But man, I almost quit. I think it was week 3, yo, when they said, hey, this week's Spanish test is a felony traffic stop in complete Spanish. And I was just like, oh God, I'm about to be home. I just remember getting off from the academy that night, going to my room, sitting on my bed, and just looking at this thing like, bro, I'm not going to be able to memorize this. And like I said, not just we also had vocabulary words we had to learn to know. There'd be like 50 vocabulary words, and you would get tested on 25 of them. So you would have to become familiar with every vocabulary word, know the scenario, memorize it, and at the same time, you have to learn study for your ops test and your immigration test. And the stress started to build up on me so much, y'all. And I mean, so much. Y'all. I mean, it was ridiculous, y'all. And I mean, man, I just got to the point where I was just like, y'all, this was a bad idea. And I was getting beat down in PT, but man, I was also getting beat down academically. And I'm telling you this because there's a lot of good dudes that are within the academy that were prior military, and some dudes that were in phenomenal shape. I mean, some serious bad A dudes, yo, that were like manly men, you know. And I seen these guys break and quit because they were like, yo, it was just too much for them. And it surprised the hell out of me. There was a couple cops that didn't make it through, yo. And so I was just like, man, I don't want to be that guy. So I mean, man, you have to learn to be, your time is precious, yo. And you have to study your vocabulary, your Spanish, study your scenario. But then also that, like, you got to study your other stuff, but you also got to get your uniform together and get ready for the next day. You still got to go eat. You know? And the PT instructors, man, they would play with your time. You know, they'd be like, hey, we don't like the way you're performing this week. Guess what? You all need to go and print out. I want a record of your diet. And so, yeah, we'd have to leave our room at some time. Meet with our sectors and the squad leaders, yo, and we'd have to write down everybody's diet in a computer and turn it into the instructors the next day, yo, and just so they could tear us apart and tell us that we were pieces of crap and fat, or as they would call us, nasties. You're all nasties, yo. And me, I was fasting a lot, yo, and they'd be like, picture fasting. I'm like, absolutely, sir. I don't like that. I'm like, well, you're going to force me to make meat? Well, yeah, can't make meat. And yeah, I was notorious for skipping breakfast because that was just one thing. Another thing to do in the day was eat. And I was like, man, I ain't got time for breakfast, bro. I'm going to catch this extra 20, 30 minutes of sleep, dog. So, yeah. Hey, yo, so, you know, we go through that, yo. And then it's, like I said, I left in November, you know, and it was about mid-December where the government was getting ready to shut down. Yo, and this was December of 2018, you know, where the government was getting ready to shut down. You know, we were getting ready to go on furlough. So they sent us home for a couple days. You know, and we didn't send us home, but we were off for like 4 days while the government was figuring this out. And I decided to fly home, and I was going to bring my truck back home because, man, while you're there, you don't have anywhere to go. You know, and Walmart's kind of a distance away, and you're just kind of stuck. You know? And I didn't have a vehicle, so I felt very trapped and dependent on everybody to get anywhere. You know? So I told my wife, hey, I'm going to fly home on December 18th, you know, and then I'm going to get up, or excuse me, December 23rd. Pardon me, y'all. It's been a minute. Yeah. So yeah, I told my wife, yeah, hey, I'm gonna fly in on December 23rd, spend the day and spend Christmas Eve with you all. You know, then I'm gonna drive back this way, you know, on like Christmas Day, because you know, I have to be back like the December 26th or 27th or something, you know. So man, I put all this money into my GMC Envoy. You know, so I decided, you know, I'm gonna drive this thing back. You know, so man, I fly in on the 23rd. I see my family, and man, and my son is just so happy to see me. And man, my kids are happy to see me. And I'm just so happy to see my wife. Yo, and man, and it was like magical, man, just spending this time. And I had never been away from my family this much. And I didn't realize what it was like probably for guys on deployment. You know, when we went to Iraq and they had wives and kids they had to leave behind, you know, but now as a father, I knew and understood, yo. But so man, we wake up on the morning of Christmas Eve of 2018, my kids are opening up their gifts, and then my phone rings, and my friend, my old partner from LMPD, Beth, calls me and says, Dexter, got bad news. Dee Dee just died. You know, as you all don't know, her name, Dee Dee, I can never say that. Dee Dee Mangado. You know, she was hit and killed on Christmas Eve in Louisville on the interstate on I-64 downtown. You know, and I mean, man, completely crushed my soul, man. I worked with Dee Dee, loved Dee Dee. And I remember seeing her before I left, the day before I flew out. I was getting a workout in at the LMPD Academy, yo. And man, she comes up to me and says, man, you look good, dude. I was like, thanks. She like, I hate you're leaving, but she's like, man, I am so proud of you. And she, I, when I worked with her, I used to be 350 pounds, yo. And at this point, I had lost over 100 pounds, and I was a lean, mean fighting machine. You know, she's like, dude, you, like, she's like, you're in the best shape of your life. You're gonna crush it. You're gonna kill it. I'm proud, so proud of you, yo. That was my last talking conversation with Dee Dee. And the next thing you know, I go to training, and Dee Dee stops a car on Christmas Eve on the interstate, and she gets hit by an MSD truck. And the guy that hit her, you know, he was under the influence and watching porn on his phone, killed her and took her away. And I mean, man, crushed me, yo. So, him, I'm not in a mental state to drive 20 something hours to the other side of the country, yo. But I had to, because I had to get back, yo. My wife is just begging me, like, Dex, don't go, don't leave. You don't need to drive. I'm like, yo, I have to drive, yo. I have to drive. Like, you don't understand. I have to get back. If I'm not back in time, I'm going to get fired and kicked out, yo. And, hey, and I'm not doing this again and starting over. So I get in my car and I start making my way west back to Mexico from Kentucky, yo. And it's like a 19-hour drive, yo. And I get halfway to, I say three-fourths of the way to where I'm going. I stopped in Oklahoma for the night, yo. And I got up on Christmas Day. Yo, and I'm in like two, three hours away from the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center at the academy, yo. And I'm just driving, daydreaming, and I mean, man, I'm just kind of out of it, yo. And I'm in Portales, New Mexico, yo. And I'm driving, and I'm looking down at my screen on my console, yo, because I was listening to an audiobook. And the next thing you know, I look up and I see a red light, and I hit my brakes, and man, I got T-bone in the intersection by this car. And by the grace of God, I don't know how, but I was able to walk away. And if you look, this is my vehicle, bro. This is my Envoy. I literally just put like $2,000 into this thing. Brand new tires, stereo, fixed the rack and pinion system, bro. I fixed some leaks and completely totaled my truck, dog. I was so mad, you know, and I hurt my shoulder, man. And my homegirl Shay came and picked me up and drove me back to the academy, you know. And I was just sitting there, and when I got there, I literally started a bag, because I said I was done and I'm not going back through this crap again. And I said, man, I'm over it. I'm going back to being a cop, because, man, right before I left, this is what a lot of people don't realize, yo. So right before I left, I went to the FOP, and I was with the officers from LMPD at the FOP, man. And what really got me was when they said, hey, we need officers to escort the body of Dee Dee to the funeral home. I remember reaching into my pocket for the keys to my LMPD police cruiser, and it struck me, and I was like, man, I'm not an LMPD cop no more. I can't. So I couldn't take part in this, like, last thing for her, you know, and, like, escort her to the, you know, coroner's office. And so it really broke me, you know, that I couldn't do that, you know. And just, I almost took it as a sign from God that I wasn't supposed to be here, you know. But, man, I talked to my class coordinator, the Border Patrol agents, and they told me, bro, tough it out. You're going to be a great agent. You're a good dude. We know it's rough. We know the training's hard, but stick it out, man. Just stick it out, yo. And so I decided that I was going to stay. And, man, it was even rougher from that point on, because, man, I had hurt my shoulder in an accident, and I didn't tell nobody. But I was like, yo, I'm in pain every day, and my knee was hurting, yo. But I just decided that, hey, I was just going to slug it through this, man. I mean, and this was in December. We had 4 more months to go, yo. And I was just like, God, there's no way that I'm going to make it through the rest of this training. And so that's when I decided I had to find a church when I was there, yo. And so I found me a church and became a member of a church down there. I believe it was Grace Church in Artesia, man. And what got me through was, I said, I just have to make it to Sunday. And if I can make it to Sunday, go to church Sunday. If I can just make it to Wednesday to get to Bible study, you know, and then make it from Wednesday to Sunday and repeat that, I can get through this, man. And that was the only thing that really kind of propelled me through it. And man, I had to lock myself down, you know, and study extra. You know. This is a little video to myself. I would go literally to this park and just study at this park. Yeah, man. And yeah, I look so good, dude. So yeah, you know, I go down here to this park, and this is where I would study on my free time. And it, like, I had to focus myself, man. I was so distracted with everything going on, you know, and I literally had to lock myself down, stop going out and partying on weekends. Not all the time, you know, but you know, I would go out enough. And have some fun, man. But you know, you gotta do what you gotta do, and you gotta cut loose sometimes, yo. So, you know, man, it was a time, man, and it's the hardest training that I've ever freaking done in my life, yo. And this is my second time getting pepper sprayed, homie. And let me tell you, it's not fun. And here's a picture of my class. Pull this up, yo. Before we got pepper sprayed, this is all of us just kind of chilling. You know, everybody's just looking. Everybody's got that look like, boy, we know what's about to happen. And this here is the after photo. Everybody's dying. Everybody's dying. Yeah, hey, y'all see me right here. Like I said, my left arm doesn't work, so I couldn't hold both of my eyes open to get the air in it. But dude, it was an absolute. I don't know. Being pepper sprayed twice is horrible, but there's something about the Border Patrol pepper spray that I think Satan himself put his nuts in that bottle and pissed in it after he drank a gallon of like Tabasco sauce. And it was just absolutely horrible. I mean, just awful, man. Awful. This is my boy Stu right here. My dude, the Navy SEAL, as I call it. That precious white skin of his in them eyes, dog. He was dying. Absolutely dying. And he kept saying something to our instructor after we got pepper sprayed. And he'd be like, sir, you ever seen the movie Bloodsport? And then the instructor would be like, Stuart, shut up. Because if you've never seen the movie Bloodsport, you wouldn't get the joke. You probably need to go watch the movie Bloodsport. And it's hilarious because it was just proving I was an old man because I knew what Bloodsport was. But yeah, you know, here's a video of me just after being pepper sprayed, driving. Well, somebody was driving me and I had my window down. Hey, man. I had to get pepper spray, boy. Ain't nothing like some fresh air, homie. Some fresh air. So, you know, we continue on training, and you know, we got driver's training, you know, and they take us out in the desert at nighttime, and that's me and my boy Stu, dog, and my homie. They were like in a nighttime driving simulation, you know, and driving in dirt, and I mean, it was insane, and it was absolutely fun. And then we come around to what we got here, you know. So, like I said, you know, there's not a lot to do in Artesia, man. There's not Artesia, New Mexico. It's the butthole of the U.S. So, you know, on weekends, you go out, you go to a Mexican restaurant, you have yourself a beer. But also when you're there, you can also go to Roswell. When I was there, we decided to go to Roswell. Everybody knows what's in Roswell. Roswell is the home of the alien encounter and the alien museum. So I ain't gonna lie, I was hyped as hell about going to this museum because I was like, man, like, how often are you, in a lifetime do you get to go to Roswell and go to the alien museum? And then, you know, I just remember walking through this museum and I was like, bro, this is it. Yeah, this is it. You know, and then you know, I just remember seeing this little dude here, this little alien laying on the bed. And I was like, yo, homeboy needs some lotion and some Vaseline action, like really, really, really bad, yo. So, yeah, you know, and so, you know, there's really not a whole lot to Artesia, you know. So, I mean, like I said, you train during the day, you train your 8 hours during the day, then you get off and you go study, get something to eat with your peeps, yo. And, you know, and then me and my boy Stu, you know, I mean, we were just slowly making it through training. And I actually remember this photo and, man, and it just how excited I was. You know, like, I was 8 weeks away from graduation, 8 weeks. And I was like, man, I think I can make it. I think I can make it. And guess what, boy, I was able to actually make it, man. I made it to freaking graduation. And I don't think, man, I was so happy, dude. I mean, God, I was so happy. Like, just the week of graduation, the one thing that got us was the instructors started to kind of, the PT instructors kind of started to let up on us a little bit. And so they were getting kind of cool. Okay, you're about to graduate. Yo, so, you know, man. So I want y'all to look at this photo and look at this gator right here, this little vehicle we're on. You know, so when you're running in the academy, and you're in formation, but these guys, they ride these gators behind you all, yo. So when you fall out of a run, they tell you, get your fat ass in the back, and they take you to the head shed. I took a ride or two in the gator because of falling out of run, yo. But like I said, I never gave up. But just look at those juicy muscles on me and my boy Stu. Like I said, man, tip-top shape, man. Like, they got us in such good shape, yo. I mean, phenomenal shape, dude. I mean, man, but I was in good shape, but I was also just absolutely absolutely tired, like mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. I mean, I was depleted. I mean, it was literally the hardest training I've ever done, you know, but it was all worth it, man. Once we got to the graduation ceremony and it was time for us to graduate, and it, like, they take you into the auditorium, you're dressed in your uniform, you know, and then your picture pops up on the screen. It's got the music blaring in the background. You know, then it shows your picture on the screen, like my picture right here. Dude, it was, look at that smile, bro. Look at that smile. I was like, man, by the grace of God, I had made it. And it, like, at the bottom of the screen, it pop up, like, or it was, excuse me, the top of the screen, be like, Border Patrol Agent Dexter Pitts. And at the bottom, it would say, the station you're going to, Naco, Arizona. You know, and just, man, and it, my family's there. And my family's just sitting there looking at me, man. And the best thing was, and it was like, yo, like, my kids got to see me accomplish something that I wanted to do for so long. You know, like, my kids got to see Dad achieve his dream, you know. And man, it was the best moment. And this picture right here, this was probably the top moment for me in the academy. You know, so there's different awards you get as a recruit in the Border Patrol Academy. You know, like, you got the Top Gun, the guy that shoots the best, got the academic award. And then there's also the leadership award. And you know, I had no clue, you know, that, man, that my class selected me for the leadership award. So I really tried to take on the role of being a leader for these guys, because a lot of these guys have never been in law enforcement, never military. A lot of kids are just kids straight out of high school. And I took it upon myself to try to help lead these guys. You know, like, for example, everybody in law enforcement or military, you know what the red man is. The red man is the test where you get an instructor dressed up in his red suit and it's padding, and you go in there and you fight with the instructor. I did that in the LMPD Academy, but it's one-on-one. What they don't realize in the Border Patrol Academy, when you do red man, it's you versus three people dressed up in a suit, and it's an absolute beatdown, you know. And I mean, before you go in, dude, and it's a crazy environment, yo, to where they got loud rock and roll, like heavy metal blaring, and they take into this room and they smoke the hell out of you with like burpees and push-ups, yo. And then, you know, you got to go fight one guy, then you got to go to the next session, do this thing, yo. And then they throw you on the floor, somebody mounts you, and you have to practice your jujitsu skills to escape this guy, yo. And then you got to go fight these three dudes, yo. So you're absolutely dead. And I just remember talking to my classmates and telling them, like, yo, here's the deal. It's going to suck no matter what you do. Don't stop fighting. Don't stop swinging. If you think you're dying, get up off the ground. I don't care if all you can do is just a small slap and just gouge an eye. Like, hey, do not stop fighting. If you stop fighting, you will fail. And all of us except one of us passed, except one dude. And the dude that failed was this guy. To this point, last time, he was a recycle. It got all the way to this point, and he failed again, you know, because he freaked out in the midst of the fight, yo, and he just started screaming, I quit, yo, and not everybody's meant to do this job, and everybody's meant to be in law enforcement, yo, but, man, all my classmates, man, got through, yo, and they just afterwards, like, man, bro, thanks for the encouragement and the advice, yo. So, it's us on graduation day right here, man. This is me, my boy Stu, you know, a couple of our classmates, yo, just sitting in formation, man, getting ready to graduate, bro. I'm telling you, man, I was a proud man, and the worst part was over. So I thought the worst part was over, yo, but we still had more to go, man. And this is the squad right here. This is my homies, man. Yeah, dog. Pull up there. That's me and my homies right there. Yo, like I said, that's my boy Stu. That's me, my boy Tomas Sanchez, my boy, but another Sanchez. So we call them the Sanchez, but yeah. So me, Stu, my boy Johanny, we were going to the same station, Naco station. My boy Thomas Sanchez right here, he was going to actual Tucson station, so we were getting split up. But the dope part was, yo, that me and my homeboys, we all walked away with the awards. So Stu got the Johanny got the academic award, which I find hilarious because Johanny's a Marine. Johanny's an idiot. He's my idiot, and I love him, but he's a smart idiot. And I'm saying that because that's my dog. But yeah, man, my homeboy, he killed it, man. He absolutely destroyed it. I mean, he graduated with the highest academic, you know, award you can get. Yo, and I think Stu got Stu's award. I think it was a PT award, but it was a high award. I got the leadership award. And so when we were going to our station, the people at our station apparently were kind of excited, like, hey, these guys are like the cream of the crop. These new guys, okay, they walked away with all their awards, yo. So it was just like, yeah, people, we got some good dudes coming to the station, yo. And that's my class right there, Border Patrol class 1110. And if you look at this ugly flag that we designed, bro, that we designed, and it was awful. Horrendous. And I wonder who has that flag now, man. Yo, yeah, look at that thing. It was, as we called it, it was like a retarded evil eagle with the color of the green. And it was awful, man. Yo, and it was embarrassing to walk around with that flag, yo. But, you know, we were proud of it, baby. We were class 1110, dog. So, yeah, so, you know, graduate, man. And actually, yeah, there's that. My graduation ceremony made it into a Border Patrol commercial that they were using for recruiting, man. So if you look, this is right here. Yeah. Check that out. Yeah. So, when I was on stage graduating, my son ran up on stage and hugged me. And I guess they thought this was just the greatest moment ever. And that, hey, you know, we got to get this guy in a commercial. And they made it and used it for the recruiting. So we do all this 6 months of training. It's finally over. Then I got to fly home from New Mexico back to Kentucky, load up a U-Haul with my family. And then we drive all the way to Sierra Vista, Arizona, right next to Fort Huachuca. So we finally had accomplished the dream, yo. And then we were on our way, and Daddy was a Border Patrol agent, yo. And this here is a small video I took of my first time being down on the border, man. And so, yeah, that's me. You know, when I got down to the border, I was just like, oh, my God, I'm finally here. Like, where are the illegals? Where are the drugs? Where are the guns? Hey, let's go get it, yo. Let's go be agents, yo. But, man, when I got there, I just realized that this was an extension of the academy, because you were in a field training, and it wasn't much better than the academy. And, hey, you're getting tested on what's, you know, code such and such. And I'm just like, bro, I don't know, man. I don't know. Yo. And just, I just want to be aliens, dog, man. And the one thing that was the biggest thing and hardest thing for me to catch on to, yo, was when you're in the Border Patrol and you work the desert, there aren't really street signs around to help you navigate and guide to where you're going. Like, there's not really 100 blocks. And so you have a giant AO area of operation, and you go by landmarks on that joint. Yeah, there are some roads, yo, but, man, them roads are hard. Man, they have, like, hey, we got like a group of aliens over by the Mormon gravesite, because there's a gravesite down there with Mormons, the Mormon battalion. And you have to kind of know where that's at in your mind and go there and remember how to get there. And they would take us in a room, the trainees, you know, and like, hey, give us the board. Like, hey, we want you to draw this section of your area out, mile markers and all the things you can think of. And man, we would sit there for like an hour, and just like, well, this is here and that's there. And it was not nowhere near what it was supposed to be, yo. But I mean, man, it was tense, yo. And so, you know, you're down there on the border and you're trying to learn the job, yo. But there's just so much that goes into it and so much to learn. But yet and still, man, I was happy, yo, like being able to go down on the ground, yo, and then walking around in the desert, man. And it, like, the first few weeks were kind of fun for me, yo, because I was actually kind of doing the job, yo. So, you know, that's me out here down on the Arizona border, NACO, yo, just out there looking for aliens. And what we got here, what's this one? And yeah, so this was a area in the border where I worked at called the Limestone Hill. Okay, so technically what they would do here is they would drive up this hill and you would have an agent outside of it, the vehicle as it's moving, slow rolling, you know, and you would set up like an observation post there, you know, and just kind of watch traffic. You know, and then the thing is, why are you talking about this? And giving, dude, the cartel knows everything, bro. They got spotters. There's a spotter just over on this side of the mountain watching everything we do, bro. And also, yeah, there's really no, there's no moving in secret there, but everything is heavily surveilled by them and by us. And it's literally a giant game of cat trying to catch aliens, yo. So, you know, this is me also down in the border, man. Like, I wasn't prepared for this, but yo, we were hopping fences and all types of crap down there. Yo, I was just like, dang. And just, you know, barbed wire fences, man. And it was definitely a different time, you know. And then I got to climb my first, call it peak. They took us to a place where it was called Geronimo Peak. Now, we're in field training. They try to break you off and make you quit as well. And I'm a big dude. I'm not built for cardio. And they took us climbing on this thing, on this mountain right here, Geronimo. Man, I was about ready to die. We're talking like, this is mid-May, June in Arizona. And the temperatures are soaring about 95 and 100, yo. And you got full gear with a rifle, yo. And you're just up here sweating and dying in the Arizona sun, yo. But, you know, I'm a man of persistence, and I don't quit. And of course, I made it to the top because, man, I don't know how to quit, man. I'm too dumb to quit. And yeah, this is me sitting on top of the Geronimo, and we sat up there for a while, just kind of looking at the border, looking for movement, you know. And this is another picture of me right here. Hold on 1 second. Yeah, that's me. You could tell, man. We were pretty high up, dude. You know what I mean, man? Yeah, it was no kids game getting up there either. You know? And then just dealing with the wildlife out there as well, it was not very fun. But you know, as we're down there, you know, I'm wanting to get in action, and I want to do the job. Like, I want to catch bad guys, yo. And then we finally, I'm not going to talk about how the Border Patrol operates deeply, because I don't want to give away some of that. A suspicious vehicle, and just the way the vehicle was moving was kind of suspicious, and we just kind of thought the vehicle was there to pick up the aliens. And so we go try to initiate a stop on this vehicle with, you know, reasonable suspicion and probable cause and all that good jazz, yo. And we stopped the vehicle, and it turns out there was a ton of illegal aliens in it. So this was actually our first catch while we were down on the border, yo. So that's me, my homeboy Johanny, and Stu, yo. And they, we got this vehicle. I mean, man, this dude was trying to get away from us and evade us, but we were able to catch him because our field training officer, man, Paul, was a phenomenal, phenomenal Border Patrol agent. Now, then we also had another thing where we caught some aliens coming over the border, some illegals. And of course, Stu and Johanny were able to track them down and run, because I told you, big boy like me ain't running like that, bro. I ain't running that fast. Actual first legit catch of actual illegals in the country. Yeah, but funny thing, we got back, and I've seen somebody scale a fence so fast. They scaled that fence in so fast, and we're back in Mexico, man, and they was gone, homie. Gone. You know, but it was, like I said, it was just literally a game of just cat and mouse, man. And yeah, this is a picture of here, me, when I got to meet the horse patrol and the border patrol. Pretty cool, man. You know, and then, man, these guys, I was just like, bro, this be a dope job, man, kind of riding the horse out here. Beats the hell out of walking, man. You know, and then, man, these guys were super dope, and they're super helpful with the agents and, you know, getting and tracking down aliens. Yo, they do the horse patrol and policing you could do away with, but the border patrol is absolutely needed. This is another picture here, me out on patrol and training. You know, but this, we're in a riverbed, so there's a river down there, but it's dry most of the year. But when it hits monsoon season, the river, you know, it starts flowing. But we're down here, you know, just in the brush, high grass, so just looking for any signs of alien traffic. You know, just like I said, it's, man, it felt like being on a deployment every time. Work a combat deployment, because with rifles, and I mean, man, it felt pretty good. And so that was a video of me in the desert with my homies. We're chasing a group, and we were able to call in air support, man. And air support comes in, and they hook you up, and they tell you, you know, they can see everything, and they can see the AO, and they can guide you to where the aliens are. But one thing I didn't like is having to do the coordinates and convert the coordinates. Oh my God. There's a reason why I'm a cop. I don't like coordinates. I don't like math. I can do it if I have to, but I didn't want to, yo. But it was a skill we need to learn. And then before you kind of get off FTO, we're in the station. There's like one last giant test that you have to do, and you have to climb to the top of the mountain in your AO. And this was called Miller Peak in the Huachuca Mountains. And so that, remember, we, you know, they told us to rest up, and we were going to climb the Miller Peak the next day. And so we parked the car at like a little location that's kind of halfway up the mountain. And then got out, baby, and we started hiking. Yo, now, yo, we hiked all day, but actually, I climbed my first mountain, man. This is me at the top of Miller Peak, man. It broke me off. I ain't gonna lie, it was rough, yo. Because, man, usually when you think of hiking, you think of it as a leisure thing, yo. But this wasn't leisure at all. I mean, this was literally trying to break us off. It broke me off. But you know, a lot of people said they didn't think I would make it because I'm a bigger guy. But I was like, y'all don't know me, bro. Like, I don't quit. I'm telling y'all, I'm an infantry soldier. I'm a grunt, bro. I'm a gutter dweller. I do well in chaos. I succeed in chaos because that's just kind of what I do, homie. You're not getting rid of me under no circumstances, man. I'm not just going to quit because you make things hard for me, like on a task. I'll accomplish your task, yo. So, you know, we climbed the mountain, man, and then, you know, we just kind of keep going about our way, man, and just kind of learning the job, yo, and just, oh, so where are we at now? Let me see. I got another picture of me and my boys here on the top of the mountain. Let me pull that up for you real quick. Come on. Come on, Apple. Okay, I guess my computer's not wanting to give me what I want. So, okay, that's not going to pull up. Let's see if this pulls up. Well, that sucks. That's not pulling up either. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this thing all of a sudden. So, what we got? Pardon me, like, I hate when a pause comes in the middle of the show like this. All righty. I guess this thing is pissed off at me and it's not going to work. Huh. Well, okay, so I guess I'll just keep talking until something decides to pull up. Let me see what else we got here. I mean, what else we got here? Yeah. Nothing else is pulling up. Well, that's a shock. Well, so I guess I'll keep going. So, yeah, so Border Patrol came with a couple different incidents. Yeah, whereas the first one, I was telling you about the wildlife. As much as I enjoyed being outside and, you know, being in the desert and tracking people, look, now all my videos are going to start popping up. Oh, boy. Look, so, yeah. That's me and my homeboys on top of Miller Peak. That's the squad, and now my computer's getting real funky. Wow. My apologies to you all. Good Lord, man. Hey, I guess we're just going to go through all these pictures now, since it's just pulling them all up late and random. That's me on top of a mountain. That's my boy, Stu. And okay, so this is what I was talking about, the wildlife in Arizona. This here is a rattlesnake, and that's the picture of the rattlesnake, two pictures of. So we were out patrolling. It was early in the a.m., man. And as we're walking through the desert, I feel something squishy under me, and I keep walking. And then I hear my FBO behind me say, oh. And he's like, you just stepped on that son of a. I stepped on this rattlesnake. And this thing, I guess this rattlesnake was sleeping because it was early and it was out trying to get some sun, trying to warm up. But scared the ever-living daylights out of me. You know, so after this, anytime we were in the field, it was nighttime, I'll step on pieces of cow crap because there's cows everywhere. I instantly in my mind thought, yo, dude, this is I just stepped on a rattlesnake, yo. So mentally, I was already done and diminished. Like, that got to me. The people didn't get to me, but the wildlife got to me, yo. And I was just like, ain't no way in hell. And every step I took out there, bro, I thought I was going to freaking get bit by a rattlesnake. And so I just, the job and the environment sounds great, yo, but I was just like, man, this ain't going to work for me, bro. And then, so I went and bought me some snake gaiters after this, yo, because I was like, hey, I want to be safe. So I started wearing snake gaiters to the field, and everybody's looking at me, making fun of me, like, bro, you serious? I'm like, absolutely. And like, why are you wearing snake gaiters? Bro, I don't want to get bit. Rattlesnake, dog. Like, man, about snakes out here. I'm like, yeah, I'd be the first person too. Yeah, they're like, well, you know, don't be a little punk, don't be a little bitch. And I'm like, well, I'm being a little punk a little bit. I don't want to get bit. So I started wearing snake gaiters, yo, and just, man. And so there's also the training also in FTO. What they would do is they want to see how you react when you're on your own. And so we had a week where they sent us out into the field by ourselves, and I enjoyed the week by myself. It was cool, yo. But what I did not enjoy was they took at nighttime, they took us to a spot in the desert with a scope, a nighttime scope, and they left me there and drove off. Said, hey, we'll be back in a couple hours. And also, I just remember being left in the middle of the desert by myself. By myself. And I just remember seeing those lights on the vehicle just disappear, man. You know, as lights are disappearing, and it was just pitch black dark, and I'm there by myself in the middle of the desert for hours, yo. And I could just, man, I ain't gonna happy, and I was like, man, this is some bullshit, bro. I am not digging this at all. A couple hours later, yo, and what I didn't know was that my FTO down in his vehicle, and then they would come back and watch you to see if you would lay down and go to sleep or take a nap. And of course I did not, because one, I was terrified of getting attacked by some weird desert creature or a brood of rattlesnakes sneaking up on me and killing me in my sleep. So my black ass was a wide awake out there in that desert by myself. Or I thought like a gang of freaking illegal aliens was gonna sneak up on me and try to kill me, man. You know, that is just, my mind went to where it shouldn't have went. And so, man, my last time in the desert, and my last group, we tracked the group into the mountains. I'll tell you about the Huachuca Mountains. And man, we played cat and mouse with this group. And I mean, man, we chased them all the way up to the top of this mountain. And I was absolutely miserable. And I was dying. You know? And I mean, man, my boy Stu and Johanny, they were killing it. They're in phenomenal shape, way better shape than me. And they're younger. Man, and we were chasing this group up the side of the mountain. And I mean, it went on for hours. We get tired. They would move. They would get tired, then we would move, and then eventually, yeah, we were able to corral them. And so I just remember catching these guys on top of the mountain, and I got some pictures of them right here. Let me see if doing it again. Oh, there we go. And that's like I said, that's Stu at the group, and then we got Amala. Yeah, that's Stu climbing the mountain still. Game of cat and mouse, and here we go. Here we go. Yeah, that's one of the aliens, yo. Like I said, these homeboys, bro, they were tracking out their dog. They were humping it. And this is the video of us actually catching the guys and taking them down the mountain. And yeah, so if you notice when we catch people, but it's not like in policing when you catch somebody, you take everybody and you put them in handcuffs, you wouldn't take them down. But here, so but when I got my first arrest on the Border Patrol, I did what I did as a cop. I was like, hey, you know, vote the SA, you know, told them to turn around, pongo sus manos, something behind your back. And I put the handcuffs on him. And the agent was like, what are you doing? I was like, he's under arrest. You know, and they was like, yeah, that's not how we do things here. I'm like, well, how do we do it? And I remember he said to me, you were a cop before, weren't you? I was like, yeah. He's like, I could tell. Yeah. He's like, yeah, we don't do that. And so what they did is, they take your shoes off and they take the shoelaces out, the illegal alien shoes. They told me, like, look, tired, they're hungry, and ain't nobody running in this desert with no shoes on. And hey, you'd be surprised. Yeah, hey, no, these dudes didn't go. Hey, they didn't try to run, they didn't try to escape. Fed. And, you know, and they just want to be processed and get to where they're trying to go, you know, and get sent back to the country. You know? So, you know, we do the processing and all that, man. And, dude, it was that's where I kind of really started having a bad time with the Border Patrol. And, you know, because, like I said, I'm an idealist. And when I see a job, I imagine the job is actually how I'm seeing the job on TV. And like I said, yeah, I like being in the field. I like being outdoors and doing all the fun stuff, yo. But what I did not anticipate was the processing part of the job, you know, where you literally sit in a giant cell and you process aliens' legal paperwork. You know? And in order to do that, you have to have a decent amount of Spanish. And I did not have a decent amount of Spanish, bro. And I was absolutely miserable every time I stepped foot in that cell. And so they told me that, hey, I mean, I was in the locker room one day. I had just got through with, I graduated field. I made it through field training. I was done. And I was going to the next step in the training process, which is the journeyman, which is a GS. I can't remember, but yeah, but I this is where I'm riding with a guy and he's just teaching me some more of the job, you know, and I'm just kind of learning from him, you know, I was talking to the guy one day and he told me, hey, don't get used to being out here every day. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yo, dude. He's like, when you're new in the patrol, you don't get to be out here every day catching aliens. I'm like, what am I going to be doing? He's like, you're going to be in processing most of the time, you know? And I was like, what do you mean processing? And that's where, like I said, you're sitting in the jail doing paperwork for 8, 9, 10 hours a day. And I'm like, that's not what I signed up for. You know, I didn't really see that part of the job. And the station I was at was a processing station. There are guys that like to go out, you know, go into the field. But he was like, yeah, that's the senior guys, yo. But you got guys, he's like, I think it'll be you. And he told me, he was like, man, you're going to hate your life and job here for the first 5 years here. And I was just like, work, you get the details you get, because yeah, it's going to suck, dude. He's like, it just is, until you can on a specialty unit or to enough seniority to where you're out in the field every day. You know, and I told him, I was like, look, bro, I never hated coming to work. Even as a rookie cop getting some crap jobs, I still love being a cop. You know, and I just told myself, like, yo, I'm not doing this every day and sitting in this cell with these people. I'm being miserable and absolutely miserable. And then that's just kind of when the downward fall came for me, man. And just, I started getting up, going to work every day at the station, and I would be driving through the desert. It's like 50 minutes to get to the station. And I'd be on the way and I start thinking to myself, I hope I crash, cause I don't want to go today. I started hating everything about it, man. Like, I got hurt during the FTO, and I fell down the side of a mountain, and they put me in the camera room for the day, where you just monitor the cameras. And I was like, yo, I can't sit in here for 8, 9, 10 hours a day. Like, I'm not built to sit in office work. I don't want to do admin work. Yo, and I was just like, yo, this is not a good environment for me. And it just was not for me, man. And like I said, the dream that I had that it would be started to slip away from me. And then the negativity started to set in with me. And I was just like, yo, I can't do this, man. I can't do this, yo. And I think if I went to a different Border Patrol station, it might've been different. Cause there's stations where you go where it's just all field work, you know, and then the guys love it. Cause they're just pretty much out playing hide and go seek all day out in the desert, which is what I wanted to do. But like I said, and I was told, yo, you're not going to be out here every day, you know, and I just decided, that's when I kind of started deciding that I'm gonna be done. You know, I was like, I think I'm gonna go back to being a police officer, you know? So, you know, I talked with my wife and I talked with my buddies, yo. And I mean, everybody knew that I was kind of miserable. I started having panic attacks going to work. I genuinely started to hate the job. And like, it's not because I don't trust, it wasn't the people I work with. The Border Patrol agents were great, you know, but there's a fair amount of shit with any profession. And you get years making over 100 grand a year, and they're not doing anything, you know. And I was just like, man, and I would just hear these guys complain. I started getting swept up in that negativity, you know, and I was just like, man, this is not what I want, you know. And then I started listening to the politics of it involved, you know, and I was just like, this isn't what I want. And then I kept being reminded that I'm not a police officer, you know, immigration officer. You know, we had an incident down there on the border one time, you know, where a local was harassing agents, my homeboys, you know, and he told them he was going to go in his house and get a gun, you know, and we were told to let the guy go, you know, and I was like, let the guy go? What? And now in my mind, I'm like, I have a badge and a gun. Like, hey, we should handle this, yo. And they were like, we were told we're not cops. We're Border Patrol agents, you know. And then we just let the guy go. And I was like, that's not right. But you know, called the sheriff's department. But I was just like, man, this dude should have been handled, you know. And that was just one. I mean, it wasn't just one thing. It was a bunch of little things that kept happening, you know, that just constantly led me to start to hate getting up and going to work there. You know, that when you graduate the academy back then, you still had to do what's called post academy tests. And I was on like tests 4 or 5 of 7, yo. And then I had failed a test or somehow. And because I was not really trying to get through, yo. And if you fail the test in post academy, like 3 tests, yo, you got to go back to the academy. And so in my mind, I'm like, I have 2 more failures. That just added more stress to me. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, dude, I'm not going back to the academy if I fail this thing. I'm not doing it. And then it just, things kind of started falling apart at home, because I would get home and I would be miserable on my days off, just thinking in 2 days I have to go back to this place. And I hated the schedule. The schedule was absolute crap. It was 5 10-hour days to get 2 days off, yo. And I'm just like, this is not what I expected it to be, yo. And I mean, man, I love the area. I love Sierra Vista. I love being next to the military post, man. We found a nice church there, yo. But everything I wanted and the desire at the job to be, it was not. It was just the I thought I was going to be doing. And I've kind of crapped on the Border Patrol on podcasts in the past, yo, because of what's going on right now with the border situation and Border Patrol agents not really doing their jobs, man. And I felt like, how much else I say this? And I felt like I thought the federal government was going to be different when it came to enforcing the law and taking care of illegal aliens and people trying to smuggle aliens. I thought the federal government would have a zero tolerance policy, but it turns out that the court system on the federal level ain't no better than the court system at the local level, man. I mean, we would catch people smuggling aliens and do all this work and this paperwork, take hours away from my family when I was supposed to be off, yo, but because we got a process car and all this evidence, yo, and then we take the case to the attorney general and or the prosecutor, yo, and they choose not to prosecute. We have all this evidence, yo, and that took the wind out of my souls, man. Like, I expected that on the local side, but I did not expect that on the federal side, yo, and just, man, the fight really got took out of my cells with that, yo, just. And then that's when I just started thinking, man, this ain't even worth it, dude. I just, the amount of things we were letting people get away with, and I just done because we're doing our jobs. Politics was coming into play. And, you know, when I tell people my disappointment with the Border Patrol right now is because our borders are wide open, our country is not being protected. And that completely contradicts the mission of the United States Customs and Border Protection and the Border Patrol. So I'm going to pull this up for you all real quick. It's our the mission statement for. Hold on a second. It's the mission statement for the Customs and Border Protection, man. Pop up this window. All right. All right. So this is from straight from the United States Customs and Border Protection. Vision statement says, enhancing the nation's security through innovation, intelligence, collaboration, and trust. Mission statement, protect the American people, safeguard our borders, and enhance the nation's economic prosperity. Priorities, counterterrorism, anticipate, detect, and disrupt the threat of terrorists, their weapons, and actions to protect the people and the economy of the United States. Combat transactional crime, deter, detect, disrupt transactional organization crime that threatens U.S. national and economic security beyond the border. Secure the border. Protect the homeland through the air, land, and market. Illicit activity or other threats to uphold national sovereignty and promote national and economic security. Facilitate lawful trade and enable fair competitive and compliant trade and enforce U.S. laws to ensure safety, prosperity, and economic security for the American people. Facilitate lawful and enable and transform and the and intercepting threats and at the ports of entry. And so they have also on the website ethos. We are the border. We are America's front line. We guard the American homeland and beyond our borders. Instruments of terror. We steadfastly enforce the laws of the United States while enforcing our nation's economic security through lawful international trade and travel. We serve the American people with vigilance, integrity, and professionalism. But when I read that mission statement, I used to read that before I joined. When I was in academy, and I would look at that and it meant something to me. Like, that's why I want to be Border Patrol, because of those things I just mentioned. That going down. And like I said, it's not the guys on the front line, the agents out there every day and night, yo, just operating. It's not necessarily on them, but it's on the leadership at a national level. We look at America right now. Anybody listen to me? Would you look at our open borders and the immigration problems that we're currently having in America? And we are the border patrol bringing these people into the country. You tell me how any of the things I just read reflect the current situation. It doesn't. I feel like the border patrol currently is not doing their job. And so I tell people, I'm seeing them neglect their duties and neglect the American people and neglect our country, yo, because they're being told by politicians to not do your job. I feel like at a certain point, somebody has to stand up and say, I know you're an elected official and I know you're in charge of me, but this is an unlawful order and we will not comply and we will not do as you're telling us because our entire purpose and our entire mission. Yo, and man, like I said, I saw the writing on the wall coming what the Border Patrol really was, yo, before this broke out. Yo, I just did it. And I just saw it and I was just like, yo, this is not what I thought it was going to be and what I wanted it to be. And I wanted there to be a pride in putting on the uniform. And there was a pride for me, yo, because like I said, I earned it through the academy. Yo, I suffered through 6 months of training, Spanish and everything else. Yo, and yo, I did everything it took to become a Border Patrol agent and wear that badge and that uniform with honor. And I want to get out there and serve and protect the people coming in. And like I said, it's reading over the mission statement and the values of the customer, the border protection, and seeing the patrol do the exact opposite in the name of politics breaks my heart, man. Breaks my heart. And I mean, man, it tells you something, yo, when a lot of the guys I work with that were just as idyllic as me about serving the country and having this job that we took so serious, yo, that's, you know, protecting and defending America and the people. All these guys that felt the same way, they are now defeated in leaving the patrol, man. And like, my homeboy left the other day, his last day. Now he's going to the East Coast and taking a different job at a different federal agency, man. And they, like I said, I was there for just about a year. Just a year, man. And dude, and like I said, I saw the writing on the wall and I knew I was done, you know. And it breaks my heart to see what is going on in America right now. It really does. And like I said, you know, I'm about a couple thousand miles away from the border where we are here, where I work at in Louisville, yo. But I'm seeing the impact in my community. And I don't like it. I don't know how anybody likes it. I don't support what's going on. You know, like I said, I'm not against immigration. I'm not against people coming to America to add to our country, to assimilate, to better their lives, yo. But I am against people coming to America to not assimilate and to try to raise the flag of their country here, yo, and say that they're proud of their country. But while at the same time, yo, they're yelling death to America or they hate everything America stands for, yo, but they're coming here and living off of my hard-earned taxpayer dollars, yo, that the government is giving to these illegals that are just flooding into the country and committing crimes up in New York City, beating up cops. And like I said, I've been silent on a lot of this because I've just been sitting back, listening, and just waiting to see what's going to happen, you know. And I just felt like it was time for me to stand up and say something, you know, and just say how disgusted I am with everything that is going on. Oh, man, and I just, man, don't know what to say about what we're going to do about it. The only thing I know that is this. We're at a point now to where we have to shut the border down completely and not accept anyone, anything for the next 5 to 10 years. It has to be shut down. And then we have to do a mass roundup. We have the next president, hopefully President Trump, comes in office and says, hey, we're hiring thousands of ICE agents, immigration and custom enforcement agents, and we're around all these people and sending them back home. Yo, they have to go back home. Under no question, under no circumstance, these people have to be rounded up and sent home. And I know people are going to hear that, man, you talking about rounding people up like it's 1940s Germany, bro. Like, yeah, now no, I'm not saying we're going to round these people up and kill them and hurt them. I'm just saying we're going to round them up, put them on a plane, put gas on the plane, give them a nice meal while they're on the plane, and put them back in their country of origin. And then if they decide they want to come back, give them a path to come back the right way, because they're the right way that I spent time and the money to get here to be part and dream. Hey, then you got these people just coming to the border, and then our border patrol agents are just waving them on in like it's January 6th, bro, and just letting these people into the country and then furthering them into the country and then babying them and making them feel entitled to everything that we have worked for in this country. How is any of this right? How does anybody right now that is sitting here looking at this feel okay with everything going on? Look at where we are in our country right now. Do you feel safe walking down your street? You probably don't. I was going to take my kids in October to New York City to the World Trade Center Memorial in Washington, D.C., yo, but we're not going because of the migrant crisis. Because they're trying to say that it's safe, but I talk to people online and live there and like, bro, this place is crazy. Do not bring your family here. So we're not going, man. We're going to stay put, dude. We're going to go somewhere else. Yo, but like I said, but where else can we really go? And there's no crisis going on. I said, man, this migrant crisis has spread across the country like a virus, like a ravenous cancer, man. And it is swallowing up everything in its wake. And we're all just sitting here letting it happen, man. And I don't care what anybody says. Our country's enemies, China, Russia, and everybody, Al-Qaeda, these people are in our country now. There was just a story I put on my Instagram of a Chinese guy that they caught wandering around on a Marine Corps post out west. He's just wandering around on post. Dude, and people are saying that, and I know that there's bleeding heart leftists and liberals that are like, these people are just coming here for a better life, man. Man, they're not just coming for a better life. Some of these people are coming here to hurt us. Do you think that China is not going to exploit the border to come here and gather intel about us, yo? And people, do you think that Russia is not sending people here to exploit us? Do you not sit here and think that Al-Qaeda, ISIS are not coming across this border to exploit us? Because we are so stupid and have the dumbest class of people leading this country that are okay with letting all these people in our country unchecked and undocumented. It's going to lead us to a terrorist attack. It is going to happen. Probably soon, and I will honestly probably say before the end of the year, we're going to have some sort of major attack. And I already know what you're thinking. Well, America, we have enough going on in our country with crazy Americans going rogue and killing and shooting up schools and people out just trying to get groceries. We got enough problems of our own to worry about. Why should we have to contend with outsider problems? Why are we bringing in and ordering in more problems to our country when we got enough? Somebody make it make sense for me. None of it makes sense. None of it. And so, yeah, that's why I'm sitting here wearing my Border Patrol hat, because this was my story about me and my year on the Border Patrol. And like I said, I'm almost at a loss for words when I think about it. I can't believe it's been 6 years. And, man, I was proud to have it. I wore the badge. Like I said, I'm ashamed of what it has turned into. Kind of like the Louisville Metro Police Department. Proud to be there. Love the yo, but I'm ashamed of what it has become and turned into. And I tell people, well, I haven't changed, but the country around me has changed. The organizations around me have changed because my principles and values still remain the same. And I defend those with my life via me every day. I'm not changing on that, man. I love this country and I want to see us do better. And I want to see us have better leaders and go in a better direction. But we're not going to have a country because we have magically let what they're saying is 11 million. I'm guessing actually probably more like 16, 18 million illegals into this country over the last 3 years under the Biden administration, man. We are in for trouble times, people. We are in hot water and it's not good. And I know some people say you're being negative. Yes, I am being negative, but that's because I don't see anything good coming from us having undocumented people in this country and giving them all of our tax dollars while we're going to work every day to feed our families. And they're just sitting there mooching off of all of us. And I just don't like it, man. I don't like it. It pisses me off. Like I said, that's why I've just been sitting back and being quiet, just observing, but I'm just tired of observing. And I just want to throw my story and my two cents out there. So ladies, this has been the Iron Pits podcast. Like I said, it's been a while. I'm back still. Like I said, I'm kind of been in and out of it, still battling issues with speech and my TBI. And I got a whole lot going on. It was long enough, and I just need to get back in and do a podcast, man. And hopefully you all enjoyed the story. Hopefully you share it. And hopefully we start a conversation about this. And I hope that people really, really start to open their eyes about what's going on in America, man. We have to, man. We can't stay asleep behind the wheel. We've been asleep. And start a call to action for our elected officials to actually serve us and represent us like they're supposed to, man. So like I said, you know, I wrote the book, I Am Pitt's Memoirs of an American Patriot. And in that book is why I share my story of the Border Patrol as well. So if you want to read that, do me a favor, go to iampitts.com, pick yourself up a copy. Just go to amazon.com, pick yourself up a copy. I think the book is only like $3 on there, but like if you reach out to me personally on my Instagram at IamPitts1, you know, or on Facebook, you know, we can work something out. Like I said, the book, when you buy it from me, costs $20, and you do that, I'll sign it, send it to you, man. And hey, we'll figure something out. Like I said, I'm not doing this to be rich. I'm not doing this to be a social media influencer. I'm doing this because I want to give people an alternative to kind of what's out there. Like I said, there's enough randos in the world on social media talking about stuff they have no clue they're talking about. Yeah, but I'm trying to separate myself because, like I say, I'm a guy that has experience, that has done these things that I talk about. Like I say, they say, don't talk about it. You better be about it. Well, I'm all about it. And I've got skin in the game in multiple levels in different areas. So I'm all in, man. I'm all in. You know, like I said, I'm not trying to be the talking head or the guy for anything, you know, but like I said, I'm just an alternative to what's already out there that you can trust. And I'm not going to just sit here and try to sell you t-shirts and all this propaganda and memorabilia. The only thing I got to sell you is a book that I think you'll really enjoy. That's all I got to sell you, man. Outside of that, like I said, I ain't got nothing else to offer you, but like I said, I got a great story, man. But other than that, man, we're going to go get ready to close this one off. It ran a little longer than I expected, but it's kind of a long story. That's definitely a long story, but man, I appreciate you all for tuning in. Like I said, you know, definitely, you know, be sure to share the show, tell your friends, tell your mama, tell your family, tell your daddy, tell everybody. Definitely support the show. I appreciate all you that do tune in and listen, even though there's been a break in the episodes. I can't thank you all enough for being dedicated and loyal. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Like I said, I don't care if it's one of you or 1 million of you all. I just enjoy doing this when I have the time now. And I just appreciate you all for sticking in there with me, man. Like I said, so this has been the Iron Pitts podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you all enjoyed. And guess what? I'll see y'all on the next one.